welcome to the Luminaries In and Out of Sect podcast, a show about the sun and how astrologers embody and relate to it. My name is SP Hall, and I'm your host. In today's episode on the Pisces sun as the luminary out of sect, I speak with the astrologer Jordan. I'm really excited to be dropping this next episode of my new sun series, which will continue for the next year. For new listeners, please go back and listen to the moon series that I did last year, where I spoke to different astrologers about their moon sign. I hope everyone has had a very good reflective Pisces season. I want to extend my best wishes to everyone for the upcoming eclipse season. Having the moon in the first whole sign house in my chart, I typically feel eclipse season pretty viscerally anyway, but I also have Aries as my solar return ascendant this year, so I think it may be a particularly eventful one for me. But we shall see. I hope it goes well for you. As always, if you enjoy the work that I'm doing, please contribute to the podcast's sustainability by becoming a supporting member or offering a one-time donation on my website. For those who are interested in an astrological reading, I've closed my books, but I highly suggest going through past episodes to find a practitioner with whom you resonate. I hope you enjoy the conversation. All right, Jordan, thank you so much for joining me here today. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. How are you?
My absolute pleasure. I'm pretty tired. It's been a very busy week in a very busy month. We were just talking about it before. I'm having a great year. So like a very kind of pivotal year this year. And I also have Aries rising on my solar return chart. It's been very kind of, I had my birthday 2 months ago. And so the beginning of the year has just been, it's been very active, which I'm grateful for. But I'm also needing to prioritize rest and, you know, learning how to balance all the things that are going on in my changing life. I like to start the conversation with talking about like how the recent astrology weather has been affecting the, you know, my guest. And I know you've recently had some planetary returns. We're about to go into eclipse season. It's your birthday tomorrow. Very happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
And as us astrology people know, it starts, the sun's return starts this kind of new year for us in an astrological way as well. So I'm just curious if there's any astrology that you've been following as of late, or that feels particularly like, you know, you have a story to share about.
Yeah, definitely. So I feel like, I don't know, like you said, lately, I find a lot of us are just kind of going through big changes at the moment. Like I said, with eclipse season coming up, that is always inevitable. Personally, yeah, I've had a lot of kind of returns. I didn't even realize, I think it was yesterday or the day before, was like my exact Venus return. I was like, okay, like amazing. That's nice, like a good little reset I feel like I needed. But being a very Venus dominant person, Saturn has been grinding back and forth over my Venus for like however long Saturn's been, I guess, in Pisces the past year or so, which has not been a very fun thing for me. And I find that I'm very kind of the Pisces Venus archetype of a little bit, you know, I want it all. I like all that kind of delusion that comes with Venus things, and Saturn's kind of come over and be like, hey, like, not sustainable. Let's not think like that. Like, it's not good. Tear it down kind of thing. So going through that, and then Saturn opposing my moon as well, has just been like at school and stuff being really tough, but we move on. Us Capricorn risings, we push through the hard times. So it was interesting, my last year's solar return, which is obviously ending tomorrow, was an exact flip of my chart. So I'm a 21 Cap rising, and my solar return last year was 21 Cancer rising. And the moon, I think, was in the eighth in Aquarius. So the past year has been very that kind of just like wandering moon, like kind of thing happening. But this solar return coming tomorrow is a much nicer solar return. It has a nice interplay between like fifth, seventh, and ninth houses, which I have natally in my own chart. So I feel like it will shift onto better things. And of course, being a first house year as well, having that agency.
So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. For those who are listening, I'm currently sharing Jordan's chart, 21 degree cap rising, with the sun at 28 Pisces and the moon at 9 Virgo. And not only are you having this like sun opposition to your moon, I'm interesting. I also have like a mutable moon, so I'm having that square as well. But yeah, like the 12th house year, the Sag year with Saturn and Pisces, are also having like the perfected ascendant, kind of getting the square from Saturn.
Yeah.
And now Saturn's kind of getting the rulership of the year, with it coming, the ascendant returning. So that's like a bit of an easier, you know, the sextile is a much easier aspect to deal with than the square. So that's really interesting. And I hope
I was gonna say I also like just had my Jupiter return as well, like, you know, 23-24, but I feel like I kind of got ripped off because, you know, Saturn's more detrimental to me and Jupiter's like, yeah, like I'll help you up a little bit. So there was a little bit of like cool fifth house Jupiter return, but then I'm like, oh, in retrospect everything else was kind of overshadowing it, but it's okay. Maybe in another 12 years it'll be better. I try not to doom scroll my solar returns and returns and this and that, because I will stress myself out a little bit too much.
Yeah, I try to look for positive or interesting things myself as well. Like, interestingly for me this year, Aries rising, I've only had it one other time in my life in my solar return, which was when I was 1 year old. So it's a new experience of that kind of place being emphasized in the solar return.
Yeah,
I think there's a good lesson there for everybody to not get overly fixated on astrology in a kind of negative way, because it can be so wonderful in some ways and bring so much understanding, but it's very rife for, or you know, whatever that word is, for kind of anxiety, anxious projection. Wonderful, thank you so much for sharing that. Can you give us just a brief introduction to yourself and your astrological practice?
So like I said, Jordan, I'm based in Australia, obviously you can tell. I'm practicing, but I don't have a practice. Like, I don't offer readings or anything to anyone, which is something I would like to do in future, just not right now. My main interest is horary astro. Like, I love horary astro, cool. But of course, like, traditional and all of that. I guess how I kind of started and got into astrology is so my heritage is Macedonian, so Eastern European. So growing up, I was kind of always surrounded by like superstition and kind of folk magic things. And I always knew I was a Pisces and like my mom a Gemini, like that kind of thing. And then a few years ago,
can you tell us a little bit more about what that means for you? I'm a Pisces and my mom's a Gemini. Like, what is that?
Now I'm going to go on the tangent. I told you
that's okay. That's okay.
Tangential. Me and my mom's chart, very interesting. Like, her moon is conjunct my Mars in the fourth by degree. And my moon is conjunct her ascendant by degree. So there's like this interesting play like that. But I just more mean like when I was a kid, like I was an emotional kid and things like that. And my mom would always say, that's just because you're a Pisces, you know, like things like that. So I always kind of had that like astrology in my head. And then, a couple years ago, CoStar came out and everyone downloaded it, of course. Like, and that's how I kind of discovered, oh, you know, there's a rising and this and that. But I originally had my birth time wrong and thought I was an Aquarius rising. I was reading all these things. And of course, the first things that come up are the more modern interpretations. So it was like, you know, you're out there and eccentric and wacky. And I was like, oh, like, I guess I have a nose ring. Like, does that really count? Not really. And then I found Chris Brennan's astrology podcast on YouTube. And then, fell into that rabbit hole. And so that's what I kind of practice now. But my real interest is like the medieval Islamic tradition, like that time period, like Abu Mashar, all of that is definitely my interest.
Yeah. I tend to agree with I resonate with that as well. I'm just curious, like, what for you feels so interesting about that time period or what have you?
Mm. I don't know. I find it very rich. Mm-hmm. Like, I find the more ancient Hellenistic, like Valens and all of that, it's very dry. It's very like this or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I feel like even just like the descriptions in the medieval Islamic are more rich, like they're more imaginative, which is how I like to think. I don't know. I just find it like a richer body of work to read. Like, yeah. If I was to sit down and open a book to read, that's the type of style I like to read as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mind Lily and like a bit more modern, but then again, that like skews a bit more psychological.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why. Yeah. What about you? You said you enjoy it as well.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I don't want to say because I don't want to seem like misinterpret the earlier part of the tradition as in astrology kind of hit its zenith in the medieval Islamic it, but like
mm-hmm.
in some ways I feel like outside of like Vedic astrology, because Vedic astrology is so like complex and feels like a thing mm-hmm. unto itself. Mm-hmm. The medieval Islamic astrologers, it feels like they very faithfully took Hellenistic astrology and built on it. And then the advances in kind of astronomy and mathematics that happen as well. Mm-hmm. They're able to just do things in a way that like they weren't necessarily able to do in Hellenistic times. Like solar revolutions, for example, or even like monthly revolutions get an emphasis mm-hmm. in the medieval Islamicate. And like I think we have perfections more in the Hellenistic astrology because the calculation just wasn't there necessarily. But mm-hmm. I'm not totally mm-hmm. up on that, but it does feel more also systematic. And I feel like my Mercury in Capricorn and my own Capricorn stellium stuff, I'm like, ooh, I like the thing that feels like a system and feels like something complete that I can work with. Not to say that Hellenistic astrology is not like that, but that's just kind of what's resonated for me.
Yeah, like getting from A to C, but knowing what B is and being able to do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious though, in terms of horary, if you took Chris Brennan's horary class or if you pursued horary elsewhere.
I haven't. More just self-study at the moment, but
cool.
I definitely do plan to. Yeah. Yeah. Just to kind of like lock it all in, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, you know, tie up any like loose ends that I may have in my knowledge or things like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like horary, again, to me, it's the most practical. Mm-hmm. Like I like things to, you know, have a purpose. Not that obviously natal astrology doesn't, but yeah, I don't know. I think there's just something so, I don't know, it's like mind-blowing, fascinating that you can ask a question and right then and there's your answer kind of thing, which I know isn't like a hot take, like obviously that's what horary is, but I know something so big in scale that you can use practically in your like little everyday to day life, I think is why I really am drawn to horary and very interested in it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I totally get that too. It really casts, I mean, I learned kind of astrology studying horary first. So I think, which I think is a really interesting way to go about it. I studied natal, like I was reading Demetra while I was kind of doing Chris's course, and I'm still kind of ongoing with that. But I think like looking at a chart in reference to a question and how the chart kind of interplays in relation to that, rather than someone's life and talking with them about how their life unfolds, it's just a different way of doing it. It makes you kind of focus on different things. And the stakes are very high, I found with horary, which can be, you know, something I think you have to approach with like real kind of humility, because this these are like people's lives and they're coming to you because they want an answer to their question and it feels urgent to them.
Yeah. Especially when you get questions like, because I like for friends and, you know, all of that, but like, especially questions when it's about like someone's career and things like that, like life changing kind of things. It's like, oh God, like I'm really need to do this one right kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
So I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's cool. Yeah. And the medieval Islamicate, like, is so important within, like, to the horary tradition. Like, horary kind of starts there. Perhaps like Saul Ibn Bishr is like kind of codifying things that he's received, perhaps from like the Persian astrologers and stuff like that. But that's the first time we kind of see like a system of horary. Which obviously kind of builds on Hellenistic like chart. Why can't I remember the name in the moment? But like chart. What is it called when an astrologer would pull a chart for the start of like a consultation to like
inception?
Yeah, something like that. Can't quite remember, but yeah, an inception chart for the consultation to kind of get some information about what the client wants. Awesome, wonderful. So you said that your mom, you grew up in this context of like your mom talked to you about being a Pisces, and so I'm curious like what your relationship with astrology was before you became an intensive student of astrology, and whether you kind of like identified as a Pisces, or if you identified more as like a Capricorn or a Virgo because of your rising and moon. Yeah. Can you tell me more about that?
I always have identified as a Pisces, but I think when you look at my chart, because I have Mercury and Venus also in Pisces, that's like, yeah, like it's a pretty emphasized place in my chart. So like I said, yeah, just being like, it's kind of the stereotype, but I don't know, sometimes stereotypes are stereotype for a reason, right? Like I was, I loved drawing and coloring in when I was a kid, but a little anecdotal story, this, and I think this is the Cap rising Virgo moon interplay with the Pisces stellium, is when I was a kid, if I was coloring in a book and I went outside the lines, I'd rip the page out and throw it out. Because it wasn't perfect. Wow. So I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to be creative and arty, but it needs to be precise, which isn't always a good thing. But I don't know. I really do. I love the Pisces archetype in itself. Like, I don't think I don't understand people who can't not like the Pisces archetype. Like, when you break Pisces down, it's Jupiter's domicile and exalts Venus, like you know what I mean, it's the most benefic sign really of the whole zodiac. So yeah, I don't know, what was your question again?
That's a good question. What was my question? If you related to being a Pisces, like before
yes, definitely, yeah. And then always have. And then once I got my actual birth time and swore I was a Cap rising and studied more, I was like, yeah, this all makes a lot more sense as well, knowing that it's not just your sun sign.
Right.
I
mean, as like a more kind of traditional astrologer, what have you, like pre-modern astrologer now, compared to, you know, like when you found CoStar, or like when your mom was talking to you about being a Pisces when you were a kid, like, what do you think about sun sign astrology, and like, what role do you feel like the sun plays astrologically within this kind of interplay of these other planets and what have you?
Well, I think it's funny. I feel like one of the significations of the sun that has kind of kept consistent throughout the tradition that I think gets forgotten a lot when we have those like traditional versus modern, you know, debates of what the sun is like that ego and that life essence in someone. Because like Valens says, don't quote me because I can't remember, but I think he's, you know, it's the seat of the mind or the wisdom, like, and your intellect, your things like that. And I feel that has kept really consistent in the tradition. And now, of course, modern is like, you know, it's your ego or your ID or, you know, your purpose in life, what you strive for. So I feel like that has kept pretty consistent. Obviously, in more modern times, the sun is placed more psychologically, like I said, with this is who I am. Whereas I guess traditionally, it's more the ascendant is this is who I am.
Right.
But I think it's Demetra in one of her books says, like, the sun is what you're striving for, and the rising is if you have the means to achieve that. If you are being like, if you can support yourself, or if you just have the means within yourself to reach that pinnacle, because, and it's like what everyone says, the sun is the center. Everything goes around the sun. The sun really is the only one with consistent motion. It's the one that casts light on everything. You know, it's interplay with fortune, of course. So yeah. And then parts of the sun that I think are often forgotten about, especially more in the modern interpretation of astrology, is like leadership, like the king, the nobles,
right?
The wise, like the wise people, because the sun obviously has joy in the ninth. So, you know, there is this spiritual, like bringing light to things aspect of the sun that I think gets kind of forgotten about every now and then. So that's part of it. And then I guess the father as well is another aspect of the sun. And I know there's two schools of camp. Like if you're a night sect chart, then the Saturn is more representative of the father. But I don't know. I don't know if I fully subscribe to that, because I feel like my relationship with my father is more of Pisces sun in Saturn's bound Mars decan than my Saturn placement itself is. So I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on like sun as father or Saturn as father.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say too, because I have the sun and Saturn conjunct in Capricorn.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I do have a night chart, but Jupiter more represents me in my chart because I am a Sag rising. You know, you have that added kind of challenge of Saturn representing you because you're a Capricorn rising. But yeah, the opposition between Jupiter and Cancer and this kind of Capricorn stellium that I have, it does make it a little bit more difficult to say. I do experience my father, or I did experience my father because he passed away almost 20 years ago at this point, as like a quite Saturnian figure. Like I've yet to rectify his chart or get his birth certificate. I'm still trying to, I need to get it from New York State soon. But I think he's probably an Aquarius rising. Was like one of those people that was just like, I'm going to do this for the next 20 years, and then would do it for 20, you know, like he just said he would do something and he would do it. And I'm a very much more mutable, you know, Jupiter and Cancer kind of an initiatory kind of person, where I'm just like, I need change. I need, you know, I need to be able to say something and try it on. So I definitely experienced my father in some ways in a, you know, I love my father. I was very close with him, but I did experience him in kind of an oppositional way.
Right.
But it's hard to say whether it's the sun or Saturn for me, because they're so intertwined.
Yeah. I feel like it's more context dependent on the chart to chart, to be honest, sometimes. Because like you just said, there is points two and four both sides. So for me personally, the sun I think is more representative of my father, just because I don't have a relationship with him. I have a great relationship with my stepfather, but my actual father, and I don't know, I feel like that more just because of where my son is and the lack of dignity that it has, really, like in Saturn's tiny little end bound of Pisces, like the coldest part of Pisces, really. So yeah, but I find a lot of people around me as well that I know, a lot of Pisces people tend to have a kind of complicated relationship with the father. And I think part of that is because the sun really doesn't do that well in Pisces. Like, yes, it's a sectmate's place, but still it's like mutable water. The sun, the sun doesn't really do that well in mutable signs, first of all. And then in a wet sign, when the sun is hot and dry, I think is like, you know, part of that why a lot of Pisces that I know personally, have this kind of odd relationship with the father. Not all, of course, but a few. And another thing I think that has a that the sun in Pisces brings, and this is just content warning, by the way, like just putting that out there. I think is like substances, I think is a lot of thing, a thing that comes up quite often with Pisces suns, especially night chart Pisces suns. Like off the top of my head, I think Justin Bieber and Kurt Cobain, the one that everyone goes to, are like two examples of night chart Pisces suns, I'm pretty sure, that suffered from this. And I think it's just got to do with that expansiveness of Pisces being mutable water, Jupiter's domicile, a nocturnal sign. And then you're putting this, you know, striving for this, you put the sun there. So the thing that someone's striving for, and it's just, it's, you can't reach it because it's such an expansive sign and the sun doesn't like that. So it reaches for things that it can't get. Do you get what I mean?
Totally.
You kind of get where I'm going.
I mean, I talked to Gray on the last Pisces Sun episode about the fact that like a lot of the ocean, and if you think about like Pisces perhaps being the most oceanic sign other than in comparison to the other water signs, like Cancer, you can make an argument for it being like the tide pool, the tide, which makes a lot of sense with Jupiter's exaltation there, because Jupiter is associated with like life, and life on Earth started in the tide pool, perhaps, you know, but deep out in the, out in the ocean where you can't even see the horizon, if you go down very quickly, you're encountering darkness and a lot of darkness and a lot of like, you know, so deep that you can't even necessarily touch the floor. And like, it's dark because the sun can't penetrate more than a very small amount of the ocean. So there's definitely something to what you're saying of like, how does the constancy of the sun's light get to that place that it can't reach? It can't.
Like it's too dark. It can't reach, which I think is, this like weird two sides of Pisces, of course, mutable, of that like so much expansion and, you know, love, quote unquote, but then it's like this side of like unattainable vastness. It's so vast that it's hard to reach stuff. Which,
and if I may share really quickly, I'm interested to hear your feelings about this as a Capricorn rising. I've been thinking a lot about like the sextile between Capricorn and Pisces, and how it feels like, you know, thinking about the goat as this transfigurational creature that can like lose its tail and like grow its tail back, can like travel to the mountaintop. And then when it's like the sea goat, it can go to the ocean deep and kind of like commune with something there to bring back wisdom. And there's this kind of like, in between, there's this mutable nature to Capricorn where it's like it's going to the deeps and it's coming back to the mountaintop, and it's communicating something between the wisdom of those two places. And so for me, that lends to, again, what you're talking about with like the ninth house joying the sun. Like perhaps you have to get that mind, those thoughts in a kind of more intuitive, a more kind of nocturnal way. Like, you know, rather than the diurnal fire way that the sun perhaps prefers. But there's still, there's a lot there. There's a lot of wisdom there. There's a lot of beauty there, in Pisces for the sun.
I'm not saying this because, well, I am saying this because I have it, but the Cap Pisces sextile, I think, is my favorite. But I think a real, like you said, I think that sextile Capricorn brings the practicality to Pisces to be able to put in place the expansive things that Pisces wants. But I think what one of the downfalls, and I know I do this, and I know a couple other people who have both Cap and Pisces placements, is this like kind of martyrdom kind of thinking that it gets into, of this like, well, I need to like help them and save them, so I'll like, it's okay if it's a little bit shit for me, but if, as long as it's better for them, I think is this kind of thing that happens a lot with Cat Pisces. And a lot of cynicism can also happen, like, woe is me, like, oh, everyone comes to me for help because they know that I'm like the practical one that can do things and provide comfort, like, oh, sigh, like things like that kind of thing. Well, I know I do that. And like I said, yeah, a few people who I know. But yeah, like you, pretty much like you said, I think part of that is because Cap can go from the top of the mountain to the bottom of the sea. And Pisces, you know, is that big expansive sea. That's why we're like that, because we are capable of bringing people out of that kind of thing. So yeah, I think it's quite a practical sextile between Cap and Pisces, despite, and like what makes it more interesting is Pisces, you know, the most benefic sign, and then Cap, or Aquarius, depends what you want, where you want to place it, the most malefic sign, where, you know, where Mars exalts and Saturn's domicile.
So, kind of the opposite of Pisces in some ways. Capricorn, domicile of Saturn, exaltation of Mars. If we think about, like, the malefics and benefics as this spectrum or what have you, or these poles. It's interesting too. I don't want to, again, I'm like, I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't know why I'm in that place. Maybe because Mercury's in Aries and I'm like, I don't want to get into a fight. I don't have that energy or the time for that. I'm in recovery from addiction, and people will say, like, the flip side of addiction, you know, you brought up that, is codependence, which you kind of bring up that as well as, like, I need to be the person to help. I need to be the person to make the things better. And that's, you know, a decent description of codependence, where you kind of take responsibility for the wellness of another person. So it's interesting that those two things came up and organically in our conversation, talking about Capricorn, and Pisces. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, which kind of, I think also just within Pisces itself, that kind of like codependency, the Pisces constellation is what, two fish tied together, like Aphrodite and Eros, Venus and Eros, Cupid and Aphrodite, you know. So I think just within itself, it's that we're going to the deep together, we're tied together kind of thing as well.
And it's like, codependence doesn't necessarily isn't, you know, just because we're interdependent doesn't necessarily mean we have to be codependent or whatever, and we don't have to go to the extremes of Capricorn, which is sometimes like, I'm going to cut myself off from the life force, the waters of life, or I'm going to cut myself off from other people to protect myself. There's kind of like the need for other people, but how do we do that in a way that's healthy, that has boundaries, that doesn't take too much responsibility for others, but is also there for them? You know, these difficult questions of life.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Awesome. So tell me more about, like, what you feel Pisces means to you. I'm curious if there's any, like, myth that comes into play with your understanding of that sign. And by myth, I don't just mean like Greek myth, but like any kind of story, literature, film that's contemporary, that kind of helps you understand what that place is. And especially as perhaps like the sun being there, how that relates to that.
Yeah. Well, like I said before, I think Pisces to me is this expansive, just a happy sign, like Jupiter, Venus, massive Venus bound, all of that. Just super expansive. I think if we go back to, like you said, about assigning each water sign to like a type of water, Cancer, the rocky tides, the waves going in and out, Scorpio, you know, some say like a swamp, or some say, I like to think more of Scorpio as like a glacier, like frozen ice, like under the water, majority of it's under the water. And then Pisces, like the ocean itself, from you know, like Great Barrier Reef, colorful coral lagoons, to like black with the scary fish with like the lights on their head kind of thing. So definitely this expansive sign. And then I think part of it as well is if we look at like the decans of Pisces, I don't remember off the top of my head, but I know like the last decan of Pisces in tarot is the Ten of Cups. So that's, you know, the happy family with the rainbow over the top off the top of my head. So reaching this place of happiness, and, you know, I think there's like a little dog and kids playing too. This kind of idealized image, I think, is a very Piscean energy, this idealization of something, trying to find the beauty, and, you know, just kind of all encompassing part of everything, I think, is very Pisces. And then, yeah, having the sun in Pisces again, but not as sect light, I think, I don't know, it's kind of hard to put in words, but personally for me, and I feel like other Pisces I know, it's just this kind of softness about life and trying to find, you know, like there is beauty in really most things, and trying to strive for this kind of beauty, this like no judgment, empathetic kind of thing. I don't know, it's kind of hard to put in words. It's a very like, like you just kind of have to feel it, like a Pisces.
It's a very kind of ineffable place. Kind of inherently, because it is so changeable, with the mutability, and then water is so like, I mean, like, how do you hold water?
Really, like, you put water in a container, it will fill the container. It doesn't matter what the shape is, kind of thing. So that's part of it. How do you, what are your interpretations of, you know, Pisces as a sign?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it really is like, I don't know if you've been on like North Sea TikTok at all, but there's this whole
with
part
with the singing. Yes, I know what you're talking about.
But like, just like massive waves in the middle of the ocean, just moving every which way, and you're just like, wow, this is fucking terrifying. You're like, I never want to get caught in a ship on this water. And so it's like that, it's the like the world's largest cemetery, but it's also like fun in the sun, summer, you know, like the very kind of Venusian exaltation connotations of like laying on the beach, you know, enjoying a beautiful summer day. But yeah, then there's like the Jupiterian element of like, I think like, maybe because I have Jupiter and Cancer in the eighth, I think a lot about like death and meaning. And so I'm like, and Jupiter also rules my fourth of like ancestry. And so I think a lot about like, the ocean is also such a spiritual place for me personally, because I grew up in New York City, 100 yards from the ocean. And so it's very much a part of like my spiritual kind of landscape. So I think I've thought about it and interacted with it a lot. But yeah, it is this very dual thing, you know, it's the darkest place on earth, but it's also, the place we walked out of, to live this kind of life that we have. So it's very multitudinous.
Yeah. And trying to think of, I don't really have like a myth in mind, but I feel like a movie that kind of comes to mind is La La Land with Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling. Because I feel like it's these two artists, really, which is, I feel like, again, stereotypical, but is a good Pisces kind of archetype, the like artist, striving for what they want, but still trying to love each other, and then realize like, it's fine, we need to go for our dreams, but I still love you kind of thing. And I feel like that is also kind of Pisces sun energy, like going for that artistic dream that you have, or not necessarily artistic, it can be in like, I don't know, math or something, I don't know. But you're still Pisces, but having this passion to do something like that, to bring something into the world like that, Because I feel like Pisces, yeah, is a very like personal, likes to interact with other people. Like we said, it's mutable. It likes the to and fro, I think, with people, especially the emotional to and fro with people. So no, yeah, La La Land like comes to my mind. So everyone should watch that because it's an excellent movie as well. But yeah, I'll try to think of some more. I guess like another. Yeah, I'll try to think of some more. I'll try to think of some more as we keep talking. What about you? Do you have any?
The only thing I'm reminded of, because on the last episode I mistakenly said that Leonard Cohen was a Pisces sun. He's not. He's a Pisces moon. But I think his song, what you just told me about the plot of La La Land, reminds me of this song he wrote for Janis Joplin when she died, called Chelsea Hotel. And it's at the end of this, like basically it's an ode to her and their relationship, which seemed like sexual and like casually kind of romantic. And it's a beautiful remembrance, but in the end he's basically saying like he says something along the lines, and it doesn't sound this kind of insensitive, but he's like, I don't think of you that much, but like the time we kind of like the time we had together was beautiful and poetic. And there does seem something similar in that of like when we were together, we had this sublime moment, sublime time. And then we both moved on with our life, and you died, and I want to remember you now,
Yeah.
lovingly, but
It's fleeting, like a fleeting romance kind of thing. Yeah. Which I think, again, speaks to like the mutability of Pisces. And like, it's hard to hold water that's like moving and things like that.
And
So.
the fleeting is interesting because it's actually emphasized in the song. He's talking about the limousine waiting outside while they're like having sex in this hotel and like kind of having to rush to get to the limousine. So it's
He
like
was a Pisces.
he was a Pisces moon.
Yeah,
Vir a
okay.
Vir Virgo rising Pisces moon, I think. I could be misremembering. And I forget what she is. I think she's an Aquarius rising. But yeah. So anyway, I was just reminded of that. But yeah, no stories off the top of my head that relate to Pisces. Yeah, do you want to tell us more about the third house aspect of the Pisces sun for you and how that influences the way it manifests?
Third house stellium, third house sun. For me, it kind of annoys me because I feel like the third house is never ever discussed ever. And when it is, everyone kind of chops it up to like, it's like your neighbors, like, oh, like, yeah, it is, but there's also like this whole magical and ritualistic part of the third house that not in traditional as much, but I still feel gets like swept away quite a bit, is this ritualism of the third house. Like it's the things that you're doing every day ritualistically. Like, and for me, that is very true in my chart. I have little rituals that I do every day, and not necessarily like these like magical, like astro magic kind of rituals. That's not what I mean when I say ritual. Just like order of event things I like done in that order. But also like that, speaking of astro magic, that is something that I'm starting to explore now, because my chart has a lot of indicators that I, would be pretty good at it. So that part, but going on from that topic more is siblings. Like me and my brother are super close. His ascendant is actually 6 degrees Pisces, which is my Venus. So
Oh,
very
cool.
cute. And I'm also really close with my cousins. Like I think of all my cousins as brothers and sisters. That's how close we all are. So for me personally, I think that's mostly how the third house kind of plays out itself in my life, is being super close with my brother and my cousins as well. And just always, there's like a zippiness of the third house. I think it's like one of the, it's to me, when I think about all the houses, the third is the busiest to me, even though it's kind of the quietest part of the day when the sun is there, you know.
Yeah.
There's still the zippiness, like there's always something to do. I've got to go run this errand and then see this person, I think is a very third house placement experience just in general.
Yeah.
But having the sun there, for me, I even though, yeah, I'm a night chart, but even though the sun's in the third, when I'm doing those kind of errands and things like that is when I feel like I feel so good. I'm always in such a good mood, like, oh, I'll pick this person up, then we'll go do this. Like we'll go to this coffee shop and then we'll go do this, which, yeah, like I said, third house people I know have that kind of same vibe. So yeah, just feeling like fully myself and doing, when I'm doing third house things like that, is kind of how I see the third house and how it plays in my life. Yeah.
Cool. Do you like walking around your neighborhood?
Love it.
Love it. Yeah. I'm also a third house Venus.
Yeah.
I love walking. Love walking around the neighborhood.
Like, I don't know. There's something so I am trying to find, if I'm having like a crap day, I'll go for a walk and I'll be like, just try to find like two or three things that are sweet, like cute, nice, that's happening in the neighborhood. Like a mom opening the door for her kid to get out of the car. I'm like, that's nice. That's like a nice thing to see in the area. So I don't know. That's what I like. Romanticize your life.
Right. That's such a beautiful, like, moon third house spiritual practice too, like finding the divinity or the beauty in like those like little kind of ephemeral things almost, you know.
Especially like the state of the world at the moment is not really positive at all, so just trying to find just little things, like, you know, I think like that really helps me. And then I think another part of the third house, of course, is that kind of not primary school knowledge, you know, like we say the ninth house is, you know,
higher education.
Sorry, it's escaped me. Yeah, higher education.
Yeah.
And third house is lower education. And yeah, like loved school and all of that. Very formative years for me, primary school, because I was bullied a little bit. Which I have found, I can't remember who said, I was listening to someone talking and I really can't remember. If I remember, I'll bring it up. But they said that they often see a lot of people with third house placements do experience bullying in primary school because it is these people around you in primary school are the people, like the planets that are in your third house in that kind of part of your life. They're the characters that you're going to see. Right. And then also when I was in primary school, was when I like went through things with my father and like the sun's there, but you know, Venus providing me solace. Like I had my family at home and friends and all of that. But yeah, so the third house I think just gets not spoken about enough because it is a really rich house. There is a lot that falls into the third.
Yeah.
That people forget about.
I agree. It's like all the things you do on a day-to-day basis to kind of support your life force in the first. It's like, interesting too. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, it's interesting if you look at the ages of man, which are like a timing technique, like an epoch timing technique you can do. Primary school, like a lot of it is Mercury. And you have Mercury and Pisces in the third. So it's kind of like, if we kind of take the hard aspect or the hard kind of delineation of fall as like a bit of a casting down, there's some information being communicated that like, oh, maybe that time wasn't the easiest in some ways, because of Mercury's kind of essential dignity, what have you.
Yeah, busted. But yeah, so I don't know, more third house talk would be good.
Yeah, we should make it happen. Yeah. The third house.
Totally.
Yeah, because I have my MC in Libra in the 11th whole sun house, and I have Venus in this in the third in Aquarius. So
Okay. Interesting. Because my MC is Libra, but the 10th. and right. also Venus in the third. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to hear about your Jupiter placement, how you feel like Jupiter and Saturn being co-present in Taurus and your fifth whole sign house, that kind of interplays with like your Capricorn rising and, you know, your Pisces stellium you got going on.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the thing that kind of saves my sun, I guess, from being completely busted. Is having Jupiter in Taurus and then having Venus in Pisces. So not a mutual reception, but kind of, you know what I mean? And but they're in sextile by degree.
Do you not so consider it a mutual reception because Venus is exalted and...
Yeah. Okay. I know there's like different thoughts, but yeah, that's kind of how it's like a half mutual reception to me. So yeah, I think having Jupiter in the fifth, especially before getting into Taurus, is, I don't know, I think I come across as someone who is that kind of, I like to banter, I like to have fun. Like nothing's really ever that serious. Like we can joke around and things like that. And then the third, fifth kind of interplay for me, I think, is what I want to do career-wise, especially is I'm studying. Sorry, I should have said this in my intro, but I'm doing my PhD at the moment in women's health, pregnancy, so children, fifth house topic.
Right.
But I also studied music as well. Like I also have a classical music degree, which I think is again Jupiter in Taurus in the fifth.
Absolutely.
Like shining that ninth house moon as well. So for me, that's what Jupiter is bringing to for me. And having Saturn, Jupiter co-present, I think it would be cool to have them kind of closer, to be honest, I think. Because they are pretty wide. I think it's 6 and 14 off the top of my head, so 8 degrees. It's kind of hard because I know... I can't remember what author it is, but one author says, or like a few say, whatever's in the fifth becomes benefic. It doesn't matter if it's Mars or Saturn. It still takes on this more benefic nature. I can't remember who or where I read it. And that being me, Saturn being me, and being my malefic out of sect, I think that's why I'm like kind of not too bad right now. I don't know how to explain it. Do you know what I mean? Like if it wasn't as bona fide, perhaps with Jupiter there and in Taurus and then in the fifth, my life would be very different to how it is. So I think Jupiter and Saturn being co-present is alleviating for me, as opposed it like tempers Saturn a bit, and having Venus rule my Saturn also tempers him down a bit too.
It totally makes sense. Yeah. I think even like your sun Saturn relationship, because like the sextile with the sun, the outer planets are moving at their fastest. So like even though it's a night chart and Saturn is in like this kind of fixed sign, this Saturn is like as fast as it can be, which adds some kind of like heat and motion. And then the Jupiter Saturn aspects like add a lot of the Jupiter Venus aspects to Saturn add a lot of bonification to Saturn,
like tempers it down a bit, which is which is good. And then being in Taurus, of course, this central sign, this Venus, the moon exalts there, it's a very, to me, just sensual is the word that comes to my mind straight away when I think of Taurus, and stubborn, of course.
It's almost like you would think that Saturn, I don't know, like to me, I'm like, why doesn't Saturn have essential dignity in Taurus? Like it almost feels like, and even Jupiter too, I don't know, but there are these planets that are kind of peregrine in this place, but there's such a, and maybe it's partially because Saturn's like you know, wants to get down to business a lot of the time, and it is a very kind of sensual, pleasurable place. So yeah, I don't know how much you've had to navigate like identity around those kinds of things, and maybe denial of pleasure or having to allow yourself pleasure, but that's maybe a sensitive subject that
we can talk about a little bit. Uh-huh. Sometimes having to not go past the line when having too much fun, mm-hmm. Is something that I battle with often.
Yeah.
But we're getting better at that. That's but great. I definitely think, yeah, that's how it plays out a lot as well, is this like just need to have more fun, yeah. to be, do you know what I mean?
Totally. I think Jupiter in the third too feels like the I need a little treat placement too, you know
mm-hmm,
what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
where you're just mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm out at the coffee shop, I'm gonna get a coffee, and oh there's this little sweet over here, I'm gonna come, you know,
get that too.
Yeah
It's kind of, not insatiable isn't the word, but
mm-hmm.
and yearn isn't the word either, but just that like hunger almost for it, mm. like I want it more kind of thing. Definitely something that goes on in my life.
And do you feel like that's part of the Pisces sun as well, because there's like this desire to know the mysteries, or a desire to kind of like shine that light more deeply?
And like we were saying before, just that expansiveness of Pisces, and then the sextile to central Taurus is how can I, like, to me, that's the next sextile. That's like, how can I make this the most fun and feel the best?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's, it's that sextile is so benefic.
Yeah.
It's the moon exalts in one, Venus exalts in the other, and then Jupiter as well. So it's like this, how can I make this feel even better? How can this be even more fun? But then, of course, that's not always a good thing to try achieve. But you're right. Jupiter and Saturn, like, it does feel unintuitive that they don't have much dignity, perhaps, like, in Taurus. Because I feel like... But then again, now that I'm just thinking about it, maybe that's just because of my relationship with having fun. I'm like, I feel like Jupiter would do well in Taurus, like that expansive funness. But then I don't know. Interesting to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Are there other aspects that the sun makes that you think would be important to talk about?
Well, it depends what your aspect is.
We can go with your aspect.
Mine, I'm more of a like a not whole sign. I'm more of a like, you know, within the orb thing. So technically my sun is completely unaspected, except maybe to my ascendant.
Okay.
If you count that. But otherwise, if you do whole sign, I've got the sextile to Jupiter and Saturn and the opposition to the moon, even though it's quite far apart. Are you a whole sign or like orb
I'm a both. I'm a both. And it's interesting because going back to horary, I can't remember Rob's last name off the top of my head, but Rob, who I've had on this podcast as well to talk about his Gemini moon, he talks about the distinction in the medieval Islamicate between the kind of by degree and by sign aspects and how they're kind of looked at differently. I think both are communicating particular things. Obviously, if you have like a very close by degree aspect that's perfecting, that's going to, I think, be more intense. But if you have like the opposition between the sun and moon, for example, it's like, okay, that's different than my balsamic moon, for example.
Natally, and I've kind of become a bit nose blind to my chart. I feel like we all can become a little bit nose blind, and especially my sun, it's kind of like just don't think about it that often. But when my moon progressed to fall with my son, my parents' divorce, which I remember Kelly Surtees said was a thing that often happens. So that just came in my mind, something to do with the sun, like timing wise. Yeah, interesting.
Very interesting. All right. Let me stop this really quickly. All right. I'm cool. I'm curious if you have any suggestions for people that are new to either astrology or planetary relationship in forming or initiating a relationship with the sun.
Mm-hmm. Well, new to astrology, first of all, I would say read wide and read far, because there's a lot to read and there's a lot to learn and a lot of schools of thoughts that don't necessarily agree with one another, which is what I do enjoy. Like, I do enjoy when there's like discourse on Twitter. I think that's what makes good academics, is discourse, getting new ideas and things like that. So yeah, just like finding something that you really enjoy, and then you'll love to do it, of course, like anything. And then relationship with the sun, I mean, this is something I need to like do for myself as well. But even just like, I think practically going outside in the morning and watching the sunrise is like a really simple thing, but is beneficial in kind of just getting this understanding the sun and like kind of where the astrology of the sun comes from. This constant thing that comes every morning, crosses the whole sky, goes under the earth and comes back. And also just like, I'm surprised we didn't talk about it today, but just the heat of the sun and that it does damage. But going from like no sun until the sun has risen in the morning, you can feel that heat build on your skin. Right. You can see it get lighter. You know, every other planet that's in the sky, you can't really see unless the moon is like kind of half full kind of thing. So things like that. I don't know. I like I kind of alluded to before, I like the little tiny little ritualistic things. So I don't know, maybe just like getting a sunflower and growing some sunflowers that always face the sun where it rises, you know, things like that, I think would be a good thing to develop a relationship with the sun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love the very just tangible, like, go out, look at the moon.
Yeah.
Talk like, to the moon.
Just look.
Go, feel the sun on your skin. Notice how the light and heat changes from month to month and what have you. I love that. All right, is there any imparting thoughts you have about the sun? Is there anything you want to add before we go?
Wear sunscreen.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, wear sunscreen, everyone. Mm-hmm. Especially it's like a big problem here in Australia is skin cancer, because the UV is just like, it's so hot here. If only we could give the planets sunscreen so they didn't get burnt up by the sun. But yeah, other than that, nah, not really. Awesome. It's been good chatting to you.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much. Jordan, where can we find you? And is there anything you're working on that you'd like to share with us?
Just retweeting random stuff on Twitter if you want to follow me. It's not always astrology. My username is Jordsfish, JORDSFISH. No services to plug yet, but one day I would love to do horary one day, but I need to finish all my other schooling first and all my other interests, and then I'll move on to this one more.
Well, it sounds like you're doing very important work with your PhD, so I wish you all the success with that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jordan, thank you so much for coming on and talking with me today. It's been a pleasure, and I hope to talk with you again soon.
You too.
All right. Thanks. To support the show by donating or becoming a member, please visit my website, which is linked in the show notes. And please subscribe to the show wherever you listen. You can also find me on Instagram and Twitter. See those links in the show notes as well. If you have any questions or feedback on the show, please feel free to contact me via my website or email me at sbalhorary@gmail.com. In the show notes, you can also find links to astrologers and resources that we touched on in this episode. Thanks for listening to the show. I'll see you next time.